Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathimerini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HELC staff. The U.S. Treasury Department on Thursday imposed sanctions on two top Lebanese contractors and a lawmaker close to Hezbollah over alleged large-scale corruption that undermined the rule of law in Lebanon. This decision comes amid an unprecedented economic crisis in the country. It also comes as Hezbollah attempts to expand its influence over Lebanon, seeking control over the powerful finance and public works ministries as the country is negotiating for a recovery package from the IMF and looking to rebuild the port of Beirut. Paul Gadala joins The Greek Current to discuss this latest move by the U.S., Hezbollah's power play in Lebanon, and look at the port of Beirut, which has received offers from a number of countries, including France, China, and Turkey, to reconstruct the demolished port. Paul Gadala is a former Beirut-based journalist and Middle East analyst who focuses on the Eastern Mediterranean and religious minorities. His work has been published in a number of outlets, including Kathimerini, Mina Source, an Atlantic Council blog, The National Interest, and is also a contributor to the Middle East Institute. Paul, welcome back on The Greek Current.
Thank you, Thanos. It's great to be back.
Paul, in your latest piece for the Middle East Institute, you describe how Hezbollah has maneuvered to ensure that the Finance Ministry and the Ministry of Public Works falls in its hands. Why are these two posts so important for Lebanon and for a group like Hezbollah?
Well, Thanos, these two posts matter so much to Hezbollah because the amount of money they handle and the authority they're given. And both these factors help them circumvent sanctions. And basically, here's how. The Ministry of Public Works oversees land transport, maritime transport, and infrastructure projects in the country. And now with the Beirut port in ruins because of last year's port blast and Lebanon's roads in a dilapidated state, the Ministry of Public Works is in a position to oversee the tendering process and gain a huge share of the financial aid coming into Lebanon, or this promised financial aid if the IMF talks go well. Also, the previous Minister of Public Works, who was from a party allied with Hezbollah, granted contracts worth millions of dollars owned by Hezbollah businessmen, helping them skirt sanctions. And the Ministry of Finance are actually ones to sign off on the transfer of funds. So if you now have both ministries under your belt vis-a-vis your allies, not only are they overseeing tendering processes and reconstruction in Lebanon, but they're even the ones signing off on it and which companies get the money. So it really heavily enlarges their authority over how money is being moved in Lebanon and can ultimately help them continue to skirt U.S. sanctions.
This power play, as you describe it, by Hezbollah is part of its longtime strategy to increase its control over the Lebanese state's mechanisms. You argue that these moves could alter the longstanding balance of power in the country. Can you expand on that? How could this shift the power balance in Lebanon, which has traditionally been based on Muslim-Christian parity?
Well, it's definitely a little complicated. So before the Lebanese Civil War, the country's confessional system was slanted in favor of the Christian elite. And then after the Civil War, it was supposed to have parity between both communities. Basically, after Civil War, you know, the power of the presidency, which is in the hands of Christians, was kind of decreased and given more power to the parliament speaker and the prime minister. And laws in Lebanon need to be signed both by the president and the prime minister. But since Hezbollah and its allies have basically demanded the finance ministry to always be allotted to the Shiite sect, and since the Minister of Finance is the one who signs off on any transfers of money and all payments of money, and they're going to be the ones basically negotiating the bailout of the country's banks and the forensic audit of the central bank, it creates another power-sharing device where instead of being Christian-Muslim, it'll be Christian-Sunni-Shiite. And also, they already have the parliament speakership under their belt as well. So it's almost like that they have two extra signatures on laws. And the head of the General Security, which is a security agency that basically oversees the country's borders, is also always Shiite. So it only gives them even more leverage over the state. And there are some who speculate, yes, this is now creating like a three-way partnership. So instead of Christian-Muslim, it's now Christian-Sunni-Shiite.
Paul, the U.S. Treasury on Thursday imposed sanctions on three top Lebanese individuals, some with links to the Hezbollah movement. Why is this decision significant, and what message does it send to leaders in Lebanon about working with Hezbollah?
Well, the decision is significant because it's actually two of the three are close to Hezbollah, and one of them, Shahed Al-Arab, is actually a businessman close to Saad Hariri, who is known to be close to the U.S. You know, he's been very propped up by the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, And what it really shows the international community, including the U.S., is really losing patience with the Lebanese oligarchy. They're enforcing the message that Lebanon won't get any aid until it really cleans up its act. And they're not afraid to go after anyone, regardless of who's giving them political coverage. So they're basically saying, you can't keep going on like this, and we really do mean it. If you don't clean up your act and you continue to steal funds that we give you, we are going to come after you and sanction you.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, he characterized these sanctions on Twitter as an important step in promoting accountability in Lebanon. Aside from this move by the U.S., Undersecretary for Political Affairs David Hale is also visiting Lebanon. What do these moves tell us about Washington's commitment to engage with Lebanon as it attempts to emerge from this crisis?
Well, it shows two things. I mean, one, they obviously don't want Lebanon to fall apart. We spoke about it the first time I was on in terms of military aid going to Lebanon. They don't want the National Army to split either. That would create a horrendous security vacuum and cause arms to fall into more non-state actors. But they're also showing that, you know, they're not going to just give them a blank check like they have in the past. They really do need to clean up their act, and they want to make sure that funds do not go to Hezbollah and its allies. Like I had said earlier, you know, a previous minister had basically granted contracts worth millions of dollars to Hezbollah businessmen. They don't want that to happen anymore.
I want to turn to a topic that you briefly covered in your piece, but which I think we should highlight, and that's the rebuilding of the port of Beirut. In your piece, you noted that aside from seeking international assistance to shore up its finances, Lebanon is also soliciting offers for the reconstruction of the port of Beirut and has seen bids come in from countries like France, China, Qatar, and Turkey. Can you talk about this bidding process?
Sure. The main two more serious bids have come from Germany and France. They're the ones who've come out with more fleshed out proposals. France really trying to take the lead, as you know, Lebanon was a former French colony, and that President Macron has really taken a keen interest again in Lebanon to expand France's geopolitical interest in the region and also try to keep things stable. They do not want another refugee crisis as well, so they are trying their best to bolster Lebanon at the moment. But let's say more nefarious actors like China and Russia and Iran have also expressed interest, and this is a means of them expanding their geopolitical interest in the Mediterranean. Iran and Russia are already present in Syria. They are already kind of working with Syria on oil exploration in the East Med shores there in Syria. So by gaining the Beirut port, they're already expanding their influence in the region, like you've already seen with China buying the majority share in the port of Piraeus. So it could end up tilting things in the Eastern Med in favor of China, Russia, and Iran.
Paul, Hezbollah and its allies, as we've discussed, are moving to gain a larger share in negotiations for financial relief and in implementing any structural reforms. As Lebanon starts its negotiations with the IMF and looks to engage with partners like France and the United States who have a keen interest in the country, how should the international community be responding?
Well, as some analysts have already pointed out, the new Minister of Finance, Yusuf Khalil, and we spoke about him the previous time I was on, he, you know, came to power with the blessings of Hezbollah and their partners, Amal. He was a significant architect of Lebanon's post-Civil War economy, which basically was run like a Ponzi scheme where banks gave out huge interest rates on foreign deposits, but, you know, ultimately they could never really pay those back. And basically the Ministry of Finance will be overseeing, you know, the forensic audit on the Lebanese Central Bank, and they're going to be the ones negotiating with the IMF. And with such a guy in power, there is a real fear that he could help try to cover up Hezbollah and its allies' previous, you know, financial misdoings and continue to give them coverage. So the international community really needs to make it known that they really want the forensic audit to continue in a really transparent manner, that it needs to be a true forensic audit. The last time they tried to do a forensic audit, which was last year, it was canceled because they couldn't get enough information to continue the audit. And the international community really needs to continue this campaign of sanctioning and putting pressure on Lebanon that they cannot continue this way, because if they continue to let Hezbollah and its allies gain powerful ministries and skirt sanctions, nothing is really going to change in the country, and it's going to be wasted aid. Nothing will change. So that's ultimately how the international community and the IMF really need to respond. And technically, with the Ministry of Finance in their grasp, they're going to be at the forefront of the negotiations. So the international community really needs to drive the message home hard. And I do think that these sanctions really do send a message to the Lebanese oligarchy that they need to get their matters into shape or, you know, face continuing sanctions.
Paul, thanks for joining us again on The Greek Current. Great having you back with us.
Thank you, Thanos.
In other news, Germany's outgoing chancellor, Angela Merkel, flew to Athens on Thursday for a two-day visit. Merkel will hold official meetings on Friday with Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis and Greece's President Katerina Sakellaropoulou. Relations between Greece and Germany were often thorny in past years, particularly during Greece's severe financial crisis. During her current visit, talks are likely to focus more on geopolitics than finances, including the ongoing Turkish provocations in the Eastern Mediterranean, Libya, and Ankara's use of immigration to gain leverage. The agenda will also touch on the energy sector, including the signing of an agreement between Greece and Egypt for the connection of their electricity grids. Finally, fighter jets flew over the northern Greek city of Thessaloniki Thursday as parachutists landed and troops marched in the city center to mark a national holiday commemorating Greece's entry into World War II. October 28th marks the day in 1940 when Athens rejected a pre-dawn ultimatum by Mussolini's Italy to allow its forces to enter Greek territory and take control of parts of it. The war eventually led to a brutal occupation of Greece by the Axis powers. Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis said the day honored those who fought against fascism and the conqueror. He said that today Greece has the right to look to the future with more confidence and more optimism, adding that Greece was now stronger geopolitically and economically. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.